Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the Book Riot Podcast. It's a weekly news and talk show about what's new, cool, and worth talking about in the world of books and reading. Today's Thursday, May 11th, 2023, and I'm joined today by the artist form... No, I'm not going to make that joke because it's... You need some prep. I was going to do the Twitter thing, Kelly, and say, are you the mystery guest? No, but people understand. Kelly Jensen of Book Riot here with me today, sitting in for backup. So glad to have her join me. We're going to talk about... We were just doing before the show that our opening segment is going to be called People Have Lost Their Damn Minds. And that's not even reference to book bannings and censorship, Kelly.
No.
Kelly, who's
not at all.
That's been going on. This is a new kind of people losing their damn minds. In a fun way, in a perplexing way. I think, Kelly, thanks so much for being here today.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I was supposed to sit in for Rebecca a couple months ago, but then I had like the worst week of my life, which is pretty impressive, honestly, given how bad every week has been for the last like 6 years. And it just didn't happen. So I was I jumped at the chance to do it this time. And honestly, I think this is like the perfect week of stories to talk about.
It's a really interesting and wild week. We're going to get to it in just a second. A couple of programming notes. If you're interested in the Book Riot Podcast Patreon, or you are already a subscriber and wanted to know, we did release the summer preview draft that's in the feed right now. We're already starting to get votes on who you think won. Had someone email today say they thought it was their favorite one ever. I don't know if that means it's especially good. They didn't like the previous ones, but at least it's not a low point. At least people aren't saying it's my least favorite one ever as well. Also, if you wanted to go check out First Edition, Rebecca joined me again at the beginning of May, just last week, to do our guessing game of what we thought the It books of the month would be. It continues to be a very popular segment, so go check that out, First Edition. There'll be links to all this stuff in the show notes there. And before we get really rolling, let's do our first sponsor break, and then we'll come back.
Today's episode is brought to you by National Geographic Books. So take a second, think to yourself, what is one of the like weirdest but kind of interesting, intriguing, intelligent animals that you know of? If you, like me, think of an octopus, then Secrets of the Octopus by Cy Montgomery is the book for you. It is a beautifully illustrated book that explores the underwater world of the octopus, a creature that resembles an alien life form, but whose behavior has earned it a reputation as one of the most intelligent animals on the planet. This journey into the world of the octopus reveals how large their brains are. They occupy their whole body, not just their heads. They can adjust their genetic makeup to respond to the demands of the environment. So with this book, you can see how the octopus can change shape and color to camouflage themselves more effectively than any other species. They are cool AF. So learn about all of this and more in Secrets of the Octopus. And thanks again to National Geographic Books for sponsoring this episode.
We're going to start with People Have Lost Their Damn Minds in book buying. Let's start with the memoir stuff. So this happened first, right? This release of over like the last week or so. And people on the show have heard Rebecca and I every now and again we'll be trolling through the catalog and we'll see some sort of unmarked, you know, to be named later title forthcoming that has a huge print run. And the last one we did, I don't even think it's come out yet. It was a May or June fiction title from Hachette that we thought was a Colleen Hoover book. And maybe it's turned out to be. And so we were playing the game of what is it. That doesn't usually turn into book sales, this kind of thing. This happens all the time, right, Kelly? This is not anything new under the sun. This happens all the time.
Right.
But what doesn't happen is for some reason people lose their damn minds and ... think that maybe this time it's Taylor Swift's book, which... I have kids that are 10 and 12, so I know more of the Taylor Swift catalog than I would of my own accord. Enjoy Taylor Swift. I understand she's a phenomenon. What I mostly know is how expensive the tickets are to the concerts right now. That's what the people in my circle are aware of. The demand is here. The taste is here. And Kelly, people thought this was Taylor Swift Why? What happened here? Do you understand this at all?
I do not understand this at all. But it's something to do with... So let me give a little background on my knowledge of Taylor Swift. It pretty much comes from TikTok. Like, obviously, I know who she is. I know, like, what she's been doing. But my TikTok feed has just been filled with Taylor Swift since, I don't know, about last year when she announced this tour. And so I know that there's a lot of fan theories about her and, like, lore around certain numbers and certain words and movements that, like, the fans have all built up, whether or not they're, like, true. You know, it's a fandom thing that, like, has built this whole culture around her, which is cool. So from what I understand, Taylor had announced that she's releasing her version of one of her earlier albums on, what was it, like, July 7th? And this book publishes July 9th. So there is a fan theory that this was all going to happen at the same time. And then something about the math of the page count. Like, the book is...
This is where I really was like, wait, is this a joke? Is this a joke the writer was doing?
No, I don't think it is.
I don't think it is.
The book is 544 pages, which when you add 5 plus 4 plus 4 is 13, which is apparently one of Taylor Swift's lucky numbers. Isn't that kind of like a lot of people have a feeling about the number 13? But, you know.
God help me. And that they made the page count on purpose. They're like, you know what? We got to add a paragraph, Taylor. And she's like, you know what, guys? We really need this to be 544 pages.
Right.
Or we need it to be 535. That's I don't get this at all. So, okay. And then so TikTok, people are going, they're super excited. And people want this. And I think, Kelly, I think you are, it within Book Riot, are our connoisseur of the celebrity memoirs of a certain stripe. Like, you enjoy these unironically, plus ironically. It doesn't matter. You like them, you look forward to them, you take them seriously. Yeah. And it's not for nothing. Taylor Swift is up there in terms of who could do this. Like, people are dying for this book. They just are. They're dying for it. They're dying for the Taylor's tell-all book. They just are.
So, honestly, the first thing that struck me, though, and the first thing that should have maybe sent red flags off to, like, anybody who knows anything, is that the book costs $45 start with. And when you look at the description for it, it says something like photography, photographs, which makes it clear this is less of a narrative memoir, more of a pictorial memoir. So I'm thinking along the lines of, like, that Paul McCartney book that came out, two years ago now, that was $100.
Yes.
I'm thinking it's something similar. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm thinking it's something similar to that. And I don't know. Taylor Swift is popular. There's no question about it. But I don't think she's hit that point in her career where, like, a memoir is the right angle, or a like photo book like this is the right angle. I think that she's a queen of capitalism. Like, she loves her fans, but she is also just, like, she knows how to make money. And I don't think that she would do this. Like, I think that she's savvier than that. She would wait, rather than try to release this at the same time she's on this mega huge stadium tour and releasing her own take on an album. Timing, you know, the price, the timing, something isn't clicking for this to really feel right for her. I've seen some folks suggest maybe BTS.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a BTS. And that could make a lot of sense. I believe, aren't they doing some shows in the U.S.? I'm not as in touch with
I'm definitely
music.
Not. I have a sense of, like, you know, it's K-pop and they're huge. Mm-hmm. And the next sentence out of my mouth would be garbage. I don't even know what the next thing to say. I mean, unimaginably huge for me. Like, when I was a kid, you're younger than I am, but when I was like 12 or 13, the boy band as we know it started with New Kids on the Block. Mm-hmm. And there was like the Monkees and stuff before, but like the modern pop singing and dancing, not playing their instruments, really packaged to be boy band started. And BTS is like... the I don't know, the viral sensation, global phenomenon version of that. So that's all I really know about it. And what we know about this book, it's a million print run. That's not nothing, Kelly. This is a big title. This is not going to be whoever this turns out to be. We're going to be like, oh, right. It's going to be someone like that. BTS makes sense. That's what I said. The thing that jumped out to me. So then, what started happening is this gained steam, and I think this is the thing with the second story we're going to talk about. The thing takes on a life of its own, where people then want it to be a thing. They want to be a part of the thing. And then what started happening there is where people were putting in pre-orders for this title that was just called Nonfiction Title 4C from Flatiron. And it was starting to become a bit of a problem, I think, for Flatiron and booksellers because, look, if it was Taylor Swift, they wouldn't done some of the stuff they're doing, like, say, stop taking pre-orders. They're starting to put some water on this just through back channels saying, they're not saying it's not Taylor Swift, but they are saying it's not Taylor Swift. I think that's kind of what's happened here. Because I don't really, if you're pre-ordering, are you worried about getting a copy? I guess you want a copy a drop day, like the real hardcore fans of any ilk.
Yeah.
Whether video games or movies or sports, they want to be at the front of the line. And people were afraid, I guess, that it was going to be like the concert tickets. If you weren't there on day one, they were going to sell out of the print run and you weren't going to get it. So it became this thing where there's, I guess, FOMO of a kind started kicking in. Like, you wanted day one, kind of fun. And I think there was a conspiracy part of it. Obviously, if 544 equals 13 was enough to people going, there's like a conspiracy theater, let's have fun on the internet part of this happening.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not going to be Taylor Swift. I think you're totally onto something I hadn't thought about. It's like, this is not the highest and best use of her first big book, right? Right in the middle of the summer.
Right.
You know, there's not a new album or anything coming out. She's doing this thing where she's re-releasing these old albums because of a contract. Well, let's call it exploitation, I think, is probably the fairest thing, as I understand that thing at all. She would be doing this either in a fallow period between albums or in anticipation of a new album coming or something else coming out. In the middle of the tour does seem weird because she's not going to be able to do events for this. Like a Taylor Swift memoir, she's got juice and she's not afraid to squeeze it, Kelly. This is what we've learned about her.
Right. Yeah.
I think you're absolutely right. This is not how it's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, she is very smart, very savvy. She's got a smart team behind her. You know, I don't imagine that there won't be a Taylor Swift memoir at some point. It's not right now.
It's not right now. It's not right. She's in the middle of the story, right? I mean, the comps that this salesperson was giving is like, here's the quote. This is not a political book. It is a fun, celebratory title and will skew slightly younger, but it's for people of all ages. This has global appeal and will have massive publicity. I would comp this to Flatiron's Matthew Perry memoir and a little bit to Spare by Prince Harry. Do you read anything in that second comps? It's just like giant sellers? Like, I don't know what to do with those two things. Like, they're memoirs? With a little bit of a tell-all, so like a BTS celebration thing maybe doesn't quite fit that. I don't know. I'm confused about that bit.
But I'm still stuck on the $45 price point and the fact that it's categorized as photograph photography. So it's not going to be a Spare. It's not going to be a Matthew Perry memoir.
No, you're right. It's the wrong price, wrong format. It's,
you're right. You know, so I think something like BTS would make sense. Like the other one that jumps out of my head, I don't know why, but maybe it's a Taylor Swift connection, is John Mayer. Although how funny would it be if all the Taylor Swift fans accidentally pre-ordered?
Unbelievable troll by the Mayer camp. Unbelievable troll.
Right. I don't think it will be. You know, I was thinking about this too. I was like, who is younger?
Has
kind of that celebrity
global appeal. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My very first thought after BTS was something like a Jeanette McCurdy, whose memoir did gangbusters last year. But again, price and format isn't right.
No. And the comp is screwing me up because the prose is fun, celebratory title. And then the comps are the Matthew Perry and Harry. Those are not fun, celebratory things.
No.
I don't get that.
No, they aren't.
Those are tell-alls that, you know, they're wizened, I guess, as maybe put it charitably. They've got some stuff to get out into the universe. There's a little bit of sourness and, well, maybe sharpness. Let's call it that way. There's sharpness to both. But I wouldn't call either of them fun or celebratory. So there's some, one of those things is going to be wrong. It's going to either skew fun and celebratory or it's going to skew memoir. I think your $45 in format for talk does bode well for, like, it's an entertainer of some kind. Maybe that's table stakes at this point. But $45 is trending towards coffee table book. at some, yeah. almost like a coffee table book. I think you're smart to highlight the Paul McCartney thing. A musician, like a tour, it's slightly younger, is really screwing me up, though. And now, this is the other thing that you are completely keyed into and just looking at a different, why is it secret right now? July is not that far away. Yeah. We're less than 2 months away. And we already know about this Britney Spears thing. It's going to be a huge tell-all. It's going to sell a million copies. Mm-hmm. You yourself are going to buy 5,000 to 10,000 copies just to keep
yes,
in your house.
Correct.
Just to have. And so what's the virtue of keeping it secret, where the Britney Spears kind of model, and even the Spare model, the Matthew Perry, we knew those things were coming months ahead of time. They were in the catalogs.
Right.
I don't understand that part of it either, because you would like, I mean, maybe this worked. Maybe they built the hype. I think they got more of this. They got more wood of this than they wanted to. I don't think they were looking to have this kind of thing go on with this. There's something fishy about this, and it's either going to be a real surprise on the whoa side, or it's going to be a real surprise on the oh side.
Uh-huh,
a million, uh-huh. A million's a lot, but don't you think a Taylor Swift memoir, again, we don't think it's that, but that's what people seem to have thought. That's kind of a print run of more than a million copies. It just
yeah,
is.
Absolutely. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So as big as that sounds, I don't think that's big enough. And slightly younger, it's not a politician. AOC is, I mean, AOC, I was thinking like what politician might do it? That's not right. She's not going to sell that many copies. It's not going to be $45. I don't know enough. I'm anchored on Taylor Swift as a musician, but I could be wrong about that. I could be wrong.
I think that the bit about the global appeal is also, you know, worth highlighting. Who has that sort of reach? But
wouldn't BTS have a bigger print run? Don't you think BTS would have a bigger print run?
Yeah.
Or is this only for America?
I don't think so.
That could be the only thing, too. Maybe it's bigger in elsewhere. You know, I don't know how Flatiron's imprint of Macmillan. I don't want Macmillan's Asian imprint does, or how the all
yeah.
does that include it here? Is it its own separate thing? But I would think that might be even small. But for 45, it's a real strange one. It's a real strange
yeah.
one. Let me see. Other guesses? Anything else come to mind? I welcome them all. podcast@bookriot.com. I'm not sure when this is going to be announced,
yeah.
so you may have to get your guesses in relatively soon. I can't come up with a movie star. I can't do it.
Yeah, I can't either. I've been going over in my head. And then the other thing I thought, which wouldn't make any sense, is would it be some kind of tie-in to the Hunger Games, except wrong publisher?
Yeah.
So they wouldn't, you
wrong
know.
Wrong publisher, right.
Yeah, it wouldn't do. But I'm so out of touch with any, like, younger celebrities,
right.
any younger
right.
B-names, big names, except BTS. So I don't know.
Yeah, slightly younger than Matthew Perry or Prince Harry could be quite. I mean, you wouldn't have to be necessarily young to skew slightly younger to that. Because like when Rebecca and I think we tagged you in on Slack when we were guessing or thinking about like who are the top five draft picks for celebrity memoirs. If you're just looking to move units, right? Not necessarily we're interested in, but like if they really wanted to open up the closet and let the skeletons fall out, I think Rebecca and I both mentioned Taylor Swift. I think we both mentioned Beyonce. I think we both mentioned Tom Cruise for reasons that I think are obvious and will never happen at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of that, I'm not sure who does like, you know, the Janelle Monáes of the world, maybe. I mean, or Rihanna has a huge following.
Mm-hmm.
It would have to be someone like that. I think Taylor Swift moves more units than all of them. Maybe short of Beyonce. I think, I don't know, that international thing is interesting. And BTS, as far as international groups go, like that's where my knowledge stops. So if there's a smarter guest than BTS out there for international pop or rock or whatever else it might be, you've got this. But you're right. I mentioned to someone, I was like, the $45 one was the one that stuck me. And we were picking up on the same vibe there too. So you have Britney coming out in the fall. Kelly, your own personal list. I didn't prep you this for this all, so this is a little unfair, but that's what makes for a fun podcast. This is what I do to Rebecca all the time. So if you're going to sit in for her, you really have to sit in for her.
Okay.
I give you three wishes for celebrity memoirs.
Oh.
And they're not going to be anodyne, whatever. They're going to be the real juice, within reason, right? It's not going to be truth serum or something like that. But within reason, Prince Harry-like, whatever you want to say about that, He wasn't trying to play nice. So this is not a play nice. These aren't play nice books. You're going to get as real of a story from these people as you're ever going to get. Kelly, does anyone come to mind? Or is that too many, too few? Where would you go?
Both at the same time. you know, I will be honest and say that I feel like my wish list of celebrity memoirs has been surprisingly fulfilled between the Jessica Simpson memoir we got a few years ago, which was excellent. The Paris Hilton memoir, which came out this year and I have not seen enough people talk about, was excellent. I'm getting my Britney book this year, which I hadn't anticipated. You know, I think what stands out about these particular ones and what makes them so appealing to me is that, you know, I grew up when they were the hot young stars, and they were only a few years older than me, and at the time they didn't have the opportunity to share their story. The only thing we ever got to know about them was what the press was sharing about them, and this came at a time when we really hated women. I mean, we still hate women, but we really hated women, and we hated young,
especially young, successful, attractive blondes that were dancing around doing stuff. We did not do right by them, and still don't. But
yeah, and so, oh, I did think of somebody. I'll come back to that in a second.
Yeah.
So I've loved hearing their stories. You know, how much is truth? How much is what they've processed since that time? I don't really care. I want to hear their side of the story, and I want to hear it in their voice, or, you know, the ghostwriter of their voice. But, you know, somebody like Paris Hilton, one of the things she brings up in her memoir that, like, really stuck with me was how the media never talked about the fact that she's a very savvy business person, that it was all about her partying and her bad behavior, but never about the business ventures that she took on, the ways and the way she built her brand. And, you know, as an adult looking back on it, it's like, wow, you're right. They never did that. They never talked about the horrible experiences she went through at this school for bad kids, this reform school, and how once she got out, like, she made it her platform. She has made this such a huge part of her career and her giving back. And we don't hear that kind of stuff. You know, we just hear about the misbehaving, whatever you want to do with that. But the person I thought of that I'd love to see one from is Lindsay Lohan.
Oh, there you go. There you go. That's exactly right. Because it's a similar mold, right, of someone who was treated as one-dimensional, and no one is one-dimensional, and went through some stuff, right?
Yeah.
And so you get to see the other dimensions and come out on whatever the current looks like. Yeah, it's a very good comp to Britney. I mean, it's as close on the film side as you're going to get, I would think. Very similar ages, very similar timelines.
There was a story, I guess maybe 10 years ago now, about her filming one of her comeback roles. And it was New Yorker, The Atlantic, one of those sort of publications. Mm-hmm. And it was this, like, 10,000-word story about her being on set of this particular film. I want to say it was like The Palms or something like that, but that might not be right. And like, this was the most compelling reading. I mean, I remember it this far on because I was like, wow, she seems like she's a handful on set, you know, but how much of that was the framing of the story versus how she was being treated and needed to react? Especially because she grew up in a, you know, terrible situation. And so she's carrying who knows what trauma and experiences. God. So, That's my wish list, because Britney's already taken care of. So
she got you. We got our 90s fallen and resurrected idols. We kind of got a lot of those. The one I keep thinking about, and Lohan makes me think of it too, is musicians have their own kind of platform, different than Hollywood, because they don't need to get cast in movies, right? So Taylor Swift or Britney or Paris Hilton, because she has a business career and family money, she doesn't have to worry about getting cast in the next Marvel MCU movie to make her paycheck and keep her career going. Because I continue to be surprised that with everything that happened with Me Too in Hollywood and Harvey Weinstein, we didn't get an actress telling all in a big book way, right? And I understand why, because you have to get cast by Paramount. If you can't build your own bridges, right? Like Taylor Swift can go on tour or Beyonce. You're within that studio system. Film and TV are so intercollected, and I'm doing air quotes about collaborative, right, as we're seeing from the writer's strike and other things, that you are incentivized, and I don't blame anyone for this. They're doing the right thing. Let me be clear about this, to keep their trap shut so they can continue to work, right? It's not, it's not even about NDAs or anything. It's just like, is my career, am I going to be ring lardnered, right, blacklist from the 50s and 60s, if I really tell my stories? Because we know there are stories out there. Like, what is the Gwyneth, right, what does the Gwyneth tell all really look like? I bet it's completely different than we would think, right? What is the, you know, Jennifer or a current Hollywood star actress who's still subject to this stuff, like Jennifer Lawrence or somebody else like that? Because that stuff is alive and out there still. And Weinstein's going to jail, but I don't believe for one second that was all the story and that it's over and that we heard all the how bad it really was. And maybe it's going to take someone saying screw it or getting to the end of their career or changing fields or something else like that. Because the Jeanette McCurdy thing is that's the tip of the iceberg. That was really the tip of the tip of the iceberg. And that's not someone even that famous, frankly, in the wider world. And she still had all kinds of stories. So I don't know who I'd pick from there because we don't know enough about it. But there would be some, you know, Charlize Theron. Think of what her career's looked like over the last 25 years. She's seen it all. But we just don't, you know, those stories aren't going to come out until they've got nothing to lose. Anyway, that's my mini rant.
I will say that the Weinstein stuff came up in the Paris memoir quite a bit. Okay. But I think part of the challenge is that these people who are writing these memoirs don't want that to be their whole story because that's not their whole story, right. You know? So it's tricky. It's tricky finding that balance between like sharing that because it's important to share that and it's the truth. But also, you know, Paris saying like for so long, I've been this subject of ridicule and I've worked hard. I have this career. I've built this business. These things also happened to me, but like, that's not my 300-page memoir.
Yeah, that's fair. Right. Yeah, like the Rose McGowan version, which is maybe directly about that, makes it directly about that or something like that. And that's not what I'm looking for. I don't want to puriently. It just feels like there are stories that still can't be told for all the reasons you said. One is like, you know, then this can be the single story, but also the stakes are so high. You're already subject to so much whim in Hollywood that the stakes are just extremely high, and I don't blame anyone, of course, for not doing it. But in terms of like, what kind of tell-all celebrity memoirs are out there? They may never happen. I was just reading about Smokey Robinson has a new album. I don't know if you followed any of this, but he started telling some tales of his earlier life in Motown that were stunning. And there's you just know there's stuff out there all the time. Anyway, okay, so Kelly, we're gonna check back if we knew the Britney book comes out. And see.
Oh yeah.
Are you taking PTO that day? Are you going to get into a hyper, you know, one of those sensory deprivation chambers and listen to it on audio? Have you gamed this out at all?
I got to wait for the pub date to kind of figure out what I can do with it.
There you go.
But I mean, it's, you know, I wouldn't put it above myself to take some time off with that book. I can't wait.
There should be some sort of audio way that doesn't copyright infringe to like do a read aloud. Like, what about like a 9-hour live reading with commentary? That should be a format. I don't think anyone's tried that yet.
Yes.
That would be pretty good. Let me do our second sponsor break because we really got our teeth into that one, and we'll come back and talk about the other people have lost their damn minds story of the week after the next sponsor. I think, Kelly, the other reason I needed to have you on is because you today are going to reveal that you are indeed the person behind the Twitter account, the Trigun Anime Twitter account, Bigalus Dickalus. I'm not joking. I'm sorry I had to say that out loud to all of you listening. I hope that Apple censors don't flag that as explicit content. But I was telling my partner, Michelle, about this, Kelly, and she looked at me as if I had hit my head on something, or maybe she had hit her head on something. It made no sense to her. I'm going to try to tell you, and by telling you or talk to you about what I understand to happen as a way of understanding to the listeners, and then you tell me, was I right? Was I wrong? What did I miss? So here I go.
Okay.
A few days ago on Twitter, there is an account, the username Bigalus Dickalus, which don't, it just is what it is. Don't think of it as a cipher for anything. That's just what it is. And the profile of this person says 22-year-old, and they have a custom anime profile picture. And mostly what they tweet about is Trigun, which is an anime series. That's their...
From like 30 years ago.
Yes. This is like tweeting about the G.I. Joe Saturday morning cartoon I watched in 1989. Like, it's that kind of, like, very specific. There's a passionate fandom, but it's not about books. It's not about anything we would normally cover. And they had, of that moment, had, you'll notice, the past tense I'm using, at that moment, about 14,000 followers, because I saw this happening relatively early. And they wrote a tweet, posted a tweet, tweeted out a very impassioned recommendation for a book called This Is How You Lose the Time War. And we'll get back to this in a second. It's a book that came, it's a science fiction fantasy book that came out in 2019. I think I talked about it as something I was looking forward to back then. I don't know. I don't remember. I like the book. It's really good. And it turned into a viral sensation that has propelled that book to the top upper echelons on Amazon and other place bestsellers lists. It's like the number three best-selling book in the country behind where the places you'll go season. So it's number one right now. If you've listened to the show before, you know it's May. January through May, every year, that's the best-selling book of the year, and then it falls off. But it's up there. It's up there with the Mother's Day book. It's outselling Demon Copperhead, which won the Pulitzer Prize. Spoiler alert, it's going to talk here about here in a second. The audiobook, the ebook. And it went nuts. It went nuts on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And Kelly, that's it. That's the story. I don't understand what happened. I don't know why this particular... People tweet about books all the time. What the hell, Kelly? Yeah. Like, literally, what the hell happened? Because that's, as far as I know, that's it.
The very first thing when Danica, one of our coworkers, shared this story was, I said, am I supposed to know who this person is? And they said, no, that's the whole point. And I was
That's right. That's right.
You know, so I had this moment. Yeah, yeah. And honestly, as I've watched this, and I check in on the bestseller list quite a bit, it's still hanging out there. But all I can think about is I'm so glad that the main character on Twitter the last week has been for this. Yes. You know, usually it's a bad player. Usually it's something people are mad about. This is a positive tweet by this person that, you know, has a passion for old anime, tweeted about one book, and all the tweet says is, read this. Do not look up anything about it. Just read it. It's only like 200 pages. You can download it on Audible. It's only like 4 hours. Do it right now. I'm very extremely serious. That's it. That's the whole tweet.
That's it. That's the whole tweet. So, is there anything here other than sometimes random crap happens? That's what I'm trying to figure out. I don't remember a story like this, I have to admit. That happened so fast, like in a 3-day period. Like the McCurdy, the Colleen Hoover... Those are slow burns, right? Especially for a backlist title. Sometimes something comes out, you know, Lessons in Chemistry. That's within the last year. That's still, like, I don't know what, I'm looking at this as like, is there anything to learn? Because now all the Twitter publicists are like, yeah, you know, one person can do what marketing can't. And I think that's completely the wrong reason. I think this is the exception that proves the rule. And my inclination is to close read the original tweet like it's the Zapruder film. Because I think everything had to work in this person's favor, in this tweet's favor. I think, and it shows how hard it is. This is actually how hard it is to market books. I think it's actually the opposite of what people think. It's like, all you have to do is tweet it out. And I'm going to run my theory by you, Kelly, and you tell me what you think.
Okay.
A is that it matters that this person has a micro-influencer community. That's one. That's one. I'm going with that. Two, that it is at least orthogonally related to science fiction fantasy. Right. Three is that the particular wording of the tweet actually enacts what people want to know. It's underknown, right? This person says there is something to this. Don't look anything up about it. It's like a mystery box. I think that's very intriguing. And four, that it's short is very interesting. Mm-hmm. Is it got a good the title? I always thought was awesome. This is how you lose the time war. I thought it was awesome at the very beginning. I think all those things matter, but then the secret sixth thing is sometimes stuff happens. And if this tweet happens 12 hours later or earlier, I think there's a chance this is nothing. Am I wrong? What do you think of my general unified theory of what happened here?
So I think you've nailed it. And I would add that I also think the fact that there is not a link here, that this person did link to something,
yes,
makes a difference, particularly in how Twitter works right now. You tweet a link out, it dies in the algorithm. This does not. This feels like, though it is not, let me emphasize, it is not clickbait, but in a mm-hmm. very specific kind of way. And yet there's no thing to click. It's, you know, there's nothing being sold here. And so I think that that, with the advantage of the algorithm, like, did that. I think timing is everything. You know, it came, it hit at a particular time where people saw it. And I think it helps, honestly, that this isn't some book influencer or somebody who talks about books.
Yes.
You know, I find, like, oddly, when I talk about things that are not books or reading, sometimes those things, like, take off. I had this tweet.
Man Bites Dog. It's Man Bites Dog from that source. Yeah. You know, they're doing something different.
Yeah. You know, I tweeted about kids' shorts maybe a month ago and, like, buying girls' shorts and how short they are. And, I had to turn off the tweet because I couldn't handle it anymore. Right. So I can only imagine what Bigless Dickless, I had to say it, is feeling about this. But at the same time, like, I've gone in and checked in on that Twitter account a couple times, and it's just been like the pure celebration and joy of sharing a book and having it do so well, I think is also something just we as people have been so sucked into so much negativity and trauma and, you know, you name it. This is not that. This is the opposite of that. And I think, you know, it gives the main character energy that we're all looking for right now.
It was the Hugo Award winner for Best Novella. And it won the Nebula and Locus Awards for Best Novella. This is not, in the science fiction fantasy world, an underknown thing, right? Again, it's a niche within a niche to be a novella within science fiction fantasy. But this isn't something really weird and off the shelf. And, you know, this this got a moment to shine when it came out.
Yeah.
And like most things, they don't.
I think
sometimes things happen, Kelly. I mean, that's the other thing. Sometimes things happen and it's like saying, well, sometimes people win the lottery. Does that mean you go out and buy lottery tickets? Well, probably not. You know?
Right.
I just don't know.
I also think there's something to be said here about so much, and we do this too, there's so much focus on what's new, what's shiny, that we forget that sometimes the best word about a book doesn't matter about when the book comes out. It's that this is a good book, this is a good story, read it. It's short. It's like only 4 hours and like only 200 pages, you know, and there's no, like, this is new, you need to check it out, this is shiny, you should check it out, this is an award winner, you should check it out. It's just like, don't look up anything about it, just read it. And something about that is appealing, you know?
Yeah. Well, they're putting a lot of their own personal stakes into, I'm not going to tell you anything about it, just go read it. Don't even look at it. Like, really, it's almost like that's like the purest form of recommendation. Because you're not even recommending that you go consider this thing. It's a do not consider it. I'm skipping the part from, hey, have you heard about this? It's great. Here's what it's about. Go see if it's for you, which is what I would normally do, right? Because I'm so particular about, like, not all books are for all people, and if this is for you. But this was like, I'm pushing all of my recommendation chips in the middle here, because A, this is not something I normally cover, and B, I'm saying just do it purely based on my whatever, you know, cultural currency or personal currency I have with you. And this person had enough. And maybe one of the people that follow them have a little more juice. You know, I don't know if someone who can get into the algorithm and what's publicly available can see, like, there are a couple other sub-influencers. Maybe people that followed this person have a bigger following, and they start retweeting and reacting it. Frankly, Kelly, I wouldn't be surprised if, for whatever reason, this snuck through the algorithm, right? That something was broken, because God knows Twitter is like, you never know what's broken on a given day.
Ugh. Yeah.
And this one could have slipped past the goalie. We would see this on Facebook. We do see this on Facebook every time. It used to be more, but even post-algorithm guillotine in the summer of 2013, something would go nuts on Facebook that made no sense. And I think it was just mm-hmm. that the algorithm got tired and took a breath and looked the other way and something slipped through. And it could be as simple as that. It could be that this is the algorithms and the code and these platforms so have their thumbs on the scales that every now and again when they release it or it doesn't work quite right, we see what's possible with true sort of like the virality that used to happen. And I think that's another thing here because Oprah can't do this anymore because she uses it all the time. Mm-mm. Jenna Bush Hager can't do this. Reese can't do this. Their monthly book clubs do not do this for the reason you said before. It's like people are kind of used to it. They're kind of inoculated to Oprah being excited about something because she's excited about something every month. And almost mm-hmm. because there's a structure to it, she kind of has to pick something. Well, Oprah no longer anymore because she got off the monthly thing. But like there's something to the rareness of the recommendation that matters. And if you cover books, if you work in books, you know, if you're a publisher or a media company like us, you can't be like, yeah, let's cover shoes for a year so we can send one tweet about a book next year. And it goes nuts. Like it doesn't work that way. But right. I'm staring at this as like, I think you just have to say like, this was a weird one. It was a meteor. This is non-replicable. And I don't even think it's mm-hmm. parsable. Even with all the reasons I gave, I think that the ghost in the machine here is the most important part. And I have no idea what that is. I really don't. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's see.
It's anything the feel good story, though. I was just going to add, it's the feel good story I think that we all needed and have just enjoyed watching.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. All right, Kelly, I'm going to let you drive the bus here a little bit because we have talked about your coverage of book censorship and banning across the country and across. Jesus, you know, from an individual class syllabus all the way up to state and federal legislation. Doesn't get any bigger than that. We have you on a week when there's a little bit of good news in this world, which is maybe mm-hmm. misleading, and I'm being very generous to that
yeah,
world.
Yeah.
I want to talk about these specific read to write bills, but then I would like to ask you a couple of more general questions about where we are, where things are going. With that. So let's start with the good news. Can you tell me about what's going on with these read-to-write bills? Or let me put it a different way. Is this as good as it feels like? It's not good that we need them, but this is the best news we've had in a while, these read-to-write bills, right? Am I wrong about that on this front?
Yes. And it's so hard to say this is good news because yeah. it's a thing that needs to happen. And I'm so torn on it because I also, and I know saying this is not going to be popular, but I'm going to say it, like, I don't know the constitutionality of some of these, how much they'll
stand muster
to the cost. Oh, I see
what you're saying. Yeah, gotcha. Right.
So it's good. They're making strides. And I think that the big takeaway we need to have, I'll explain what they are in a moment, but I think the big takeaway we need to have is that there are politicians who are paying attention and that mm-hmm. the more we get in their ears, the more attention this gets, because I think that there's still a giant gulf between what people who are working on the ground in libraries and schools are experiencing firsthand versus what people in administration understand is happening versus people in legislature understanding what's happening. And I repeat this because I think it's really important that most people don't know what's going on because most people are not sitting online keeping in touch with this. Nor should they, you know? There's no reason for them to be. Mm-hmm. And we can put a lot of the blame, too, right on the media. You know, newspapers are dying. They've been dying yeah. for decades. And
the locality of it is important, right? This is something you've highlighted, mm-hmm, right? Like mm-hmm. these happen in specific rooms and specific places, yeah. often in specific counties, far from the long reach of national coverage, right?
Right. And even when we do get national coverage, it's not great. Mm-hmm. You know, I know from personal experience that NPR reached out about a story and interviewed me and interviewed several other people who I work with closely on book ban stuff and didn't include any of our comments in the story because it didn't fit her narrative. And yeah. that was such a slap in the face. Here we have this opportunity to finally have a big national platform to explain what's going on and to give people direct actions for how to make change. And absolutely none of it was included in the story. You know, and so when you talk about it's a failure of the news, it's a failure on the news from the local level to the national level. And and really at the local level, it's particularly sad because there used to be people who showed up to all these meetings who their job was to go to the school board meetings and report on what's happening, whose job was to go to the library board meetings and report on what's happening, you know, but those jobs don't exist anymore. So that coverage doesn't exist anymore. And therefore people don't know what's going on. And if they do, it's because they're part of a group that is choosing to read minutes in one way and interpret it in whatever lens they want to interpret it. So, you know, you get caught in people who need to know don't know. How can they know? How can we be mad that they don't know when they just can't know? So that aside, there are a number of promising, though, again, with the caveat, I think that they're going to be challenged were they to get all the way through, right to read bills. And we have three in three different states. And then we have one, I would say two at the national level. So I'm going to start with Illinois. This is the one I'm most familiar with. I live here, so that's a start. But also, the Illinois bill, the Right to Read bill, ties state funding of libraries to their commitment to intellectual freedom. So for school libraries and public libraries to get certain state aid and certain state grants, they have to have a provision in their policies that they do not ban books, that they adhere to ALA's, you know, intellectual freedom standards, which are essentially First Amendment rights. It's passed the House and the Senate, and Pritzker has talked about banned books before, so none of us are worried about him, like, signing off on this, which is great. Like, this is a great bill, and I think it approaches the topic in a way that people who are not super invested in this or know what's going on get it. Oh, yeah, it's bad to ban books. Like, good move by the state.
Yeah, it's very plain spoken as these. I mean, this is not like intellectual academic gymnastics. It's very sort of, you know, very simple, not jingoistic necessarily, but a memorable pitch. It's like people should be able to read books. It's like people
And I think it helps too that the way that Illinois is structured is our state librarian is the Secretary of State. So our state librarian is not a librarian. It's somebody who's a politician. That goes both ways. And I think in the case here, it works well because he's able to explain it in a way that's less like tied to libraries, if that makes sense. He knows how to
translating into a lingua franca, right? It's not speaking librarianese to other librarians. That matters in all these, in any case like this, to speak a more, you know, generally, to use language that's more generally understandable. Interesting.
Right. So that's the Illinois one. I suspect it'll pass. We shouldn't have a problem with that passing. The next one, this one just hit in mid-April in New York. It's State Senate Bill 6350, and it would amend the state education law to mandate that schools and libraries provide access to a broad range of materials to all students. So basically, it would require policies to say that a wide range of materials are available to students, and specifying that would help protect collections in theory, because they would not be able to be dictated by a small, well-funded, vocal minority who are suggesting that a library should look a certain way. This one's in the Senate Education Committee as of the last time I checked. So I don't know if it'll actually go anywhere or what the reality is of this one passing through this legislative season, but it's there. It's being talked about. And I think that it provides a pretty good template for folks to use in terms of like writing their own senators, writing their own, you know, legislators. And then the third state one is Rhode Island House Bill 6066. And this one is complicated because what this does is it amends the obscenity law, basically, and does so in a way that still allows people to claim that they're obscene, pornographic, all the words that they love to use, books in libraries and in schools, except library workers and educators who are being attacked for this would not be able to be sued for having obscene material. So, it's, you know, it protects the workers, but it doesn't actually do much else.
It's like saying, well, you can't get busted for dealing weed, but it's not decriminalizing weed.
Right. It's there you go. Perfect example. Yeah.
Not that this is weed, whatever your opinion, but that's the kind of the structure.
Yeah. You know, this one stalled in House committee. It's been there since mid-March, so who knows if it's going to do anything. But again, something, you know, like it's at this point where something at this point feels good, even if it's not great. And then a couple at the federal level is the U.S. Right to Read Act. This one actually was proposed last fall, but everybody knew it wasn't going to go anywhere. It was a lame duck session, like nothing was going to happen. It's back. And basically what this one does is it would provide that there are school libraries across the country and help give money to grow these school libraries. So that's part one. Part two is this provision that they're adding that would require libraries to note that they are spaces of First Amendment rights granted to all. And I kind of love this. I love that they want to encode the First Amendment constitutional rights to all in these school libraries. That is a piece of this puzzle that's been missing. And when you think about the ways that the book banners have been using the Constitution to have materials pulled, invoking the Constitution, saying that those books need to stay, I think is what needs to happen at this point. Will it go further? I don't know. This session maybe is a little bit more possible than last session, but again, like, we'll see. For anybody who wants to write that one down or look it up, it's just the U.S. Right to Read Act. It's bicameral, so both in the House and the Senate right now. And then the final one, this one, something that I think is getting missed right now just because there is not enough time, there are not enough people, there is not enough energy, is in this swell of school and library book banning, prison censorship hasn't stopped. It's continued. It's still huge. And this particular act, again, at the federal level, is called the Prison Libraries Act, and it would ensure that there are prisons with libraries, which is awesome. It would authorize $60 million over 6 years for state prisons to provide library resources and services. And that's the key part. So it's not just going to be dumping a ton of books into a space. It's going to have a trained professional there who could help people experiencing incarceration to have access to material and access to knowledge. I love this, and I think that it is well past time. It's not going to change the fact that so many of these prisons are private run and do whatever the heck they want to do, but it will help so many people too. And so you take the good with the bad here. It's better than nothing, and I think that the people who will benefit from this will then turn around and be able to help advocate for making better for more people. So we'll see. Those are the ones that are hanging out right now. I'm at this point where I don't feel positive, and I haven't felt positive about censorship stuff for a long time now, but so many people talk about, and these are people who are working in libraries and in schools right now, say, you know, it doesn't feel like we're moving the needle. It doesn't feel like we're winning this. It doesn't feel good now. But what does feel good and what's important is that we are documenting this, and that at the end of the day, we'll be able to say we fought. We did the right thing. You know, we're on the right side of history. We've documented all of this so that, you know, were the worst to happen, nobody could say that people were not speaking out, people were not speaking up, because that's a straight up lie. I have the opportunity, and I'm really excited about this. The students at Central York School District in Pennsylvania, they protested book bans in 2021. They came together and created this organization. It's a student social justice group. And they protested book bans. Again, this was like September 2021. Mm-hmm. They were successful in protesting. They showed up every day before school, protested. Well, that group is protesting again because book bans are back. And their organizers have said, like, these kids are super interested in talking and sharing. So I've reached out to them, and we should hear from them sometime soon. And I'm going to give them space on the site to talk, because I think, like, as much as I hate that young people have to do this, they shouldn't have to. I think it's important that they get the space to talk and to share, because it's them who are being impacted here, you know?
That's right.
And
that's right.
Yeah. At the end of the day, like, that's who we need to listen to, who we need to support, who we need to amplify. That's really all I've got. It's just, you know.
Yeah. I mean, so to go to those specifics too, and we've talked about, I remember the first time any of this was on my radar in a real way when I did an episode for the old annotated show about Drag Queen Story Hour, right? Like, that was my first really getting, and I haven't done, I'm not putting myself in the same level as you with Kelly, but like, when I really, like, this is a real thing. I'm just being honest here. Like, these are real people, and I spoke to individual people in libraries, and they were being, you know, picketed, and I think their lives and bodies were more on the line than even I thought then. You know, I thought they were, but in hindsight, I think I was even naive then. And the thing that I think you have been really, one of the meta pieces you've been trumpeting is that, kind of like the thoughts and prayers about guns here is a similar thing. It's like, thoughts and prayers don't work with this. These are people, the other side is extremely well organized and extremely motivated and extremely on the ground. And you can't combat that with go buy my book at the bookstore that just got banned, or people can get it other places, or celebrities or other, I think, well-meaning people, even if naive, saying we shouldn't do this, because that's not where this battle is fought, right? This battle is fought in community library spaces, at board meetings, local elections, local laws. Yep. Because what's happened is, you know, and tell me if I've got this grossly correct, is that these real extremists have found a weak point in our system when it comes to this sort of thing. And they're flooding the zone with challenges, with words, with vitriol, with garbage 1984-like language about, you know, freedoms. And whatever you want to say, those of us on the left were ill-prepared for this. Even after all the Trump stuff, I don't know how we missed this. I'll just say it again. We missed this, that this was a chink in the armor. I think it was because we saw, and Rebecca and I were talking about this last week, we saw the number of books by queer people, by people of color, by queer people of color going up, being more valuable, you know, being more available from publishers. Publishers, say what you will, it's better than it used to be 10 years ago about the availability and just the of these titles to be printed, literally printed, available. And maybe rested on our laurels, maybe thought that was enough, maybe didn't realize how vulnerable. And I'm looking at Oregon, right? And all states are like this. There's no your state isn't so blue, which is why I think this even these laws in blue states are useful, because it protects the people that don't live in blue counties or blue school districts, right? Because Oregon, you get 6 miles out of Oregon and it's Trump Sign City. Right. Even though Oregon's not really at play in a national landscape, those places need protection. Right. And they can. And what is that protection? It's laws and it's bills and it's local codes and it's local elected officials. And hashtag I read banned, or wearing a T-shirt that says I read banned books, or having a koozie that says I read banned books. That's not going to do anything. And
that's
you gotta
just consumerism.
Write, that's just consumerism. And it makes you feel good. And maybe I'm a part of this. But it's happens locally, and happens. You got, if you want something to happen differently, you got to do something different, and that's hard to hear because it's a pain in the ass. And ain't none of these rooms fun, Kelly? Ain't none of these rooms fun to show up in?
No.
So anyway, and I just wanted to reiterate that's one thing I continue to try to remember that you keep saying. It's like, you got to write. You got to show up. And whatever it may, you got to be a part of the fight. And it's not the thing that's easy. It's flipping hard, man.
Right.
I'm not telling you. Right. I'm telling the people listening.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know. And, you know, I shared this story on Twitter a couple weeks ago and, like, this blew up. And I just thought, you know, this is not a feel-good story. Like, don't use this as your feel-good story. But the story goes, I'm part of a progressive parent group in my county, and somebody in there said that one of their kids wanted to start a GSA, so a Gay Straight Alliance, Gender Sexuality Alliance, at the local middle school in my town. But they had gotten a sponsor. It was all going good. But the sponsor started getting all kinds of hate messages from a particular sect of people in this community. Now, these people were sitting on Facebook in their little group, just ripping apart this group, talking about how it's indoctrination. They figured out when the group was having their first meeting, and they talked about going. These are adults who talked about going to a meeting that middle schoolers were going to have to intimidate them. And I said, look, here's what's got to happen is y'all got to show up to the board meeting. First of all, legally, the school has to provide it. There is a law that says if a group in a secondary education school wants to start a GSA, they have to. The school has to allow that to happen. Middle school falls under secondary schools. So, you know, one, legally, they have to do this. Two, you need to show up because you need to have your voice heard in that room. If that means you write a letter, you write a letter. Here's all the school board members. If that means you can go in person, you go in person. Here's the thing. The school board got tons of letters, including to the teacher who was going to be the sponsor of this group, saying, like, yes, please do this. We support this. This is what our community is about. And none of the people who were complaining showed up to the board meeting when they found out that all of the supporters were showing up. So supporters showed up.
It's classic bully behavior, right? When there's a little pushback, they wilt like flowers in the desert. It does.
Right.
Right. It's a good point. Yeah.
So, you know, PFLAG showed up. We have a local chapter of PFLAG. They showed up. Tons of parents showed up and they talked. They talked to the school board and said, look, our kids deserve this group. These people who are creating all of this nonsense do not speak on behalf of the majority of the community. And they do not speak on behalf of me, who has a kid who wants to do this.
That's
so the board agreed. The board is letting the group go through. And, you know, a lot of people took this as a feel-good story because at the end, the good guys win. That's not the story. The story is that people showed up and the complainers did not. And if you want to make any change, you have to show up. You can't just say you're going to do it. You know, it makes me so mad because we have given people the tools to do this. We've given them the letters. We've given them the templates. We've given them, like, literally, you don't have to do any work except sign your name and put the names of people who you need to write to in it. If people can't do that, we're not getting anywhere. And one of the comments that came to me after the situation at the high school was from a local business owner who said to me one day, I didn't know that was happening at the schools. And I said, well, why would you? It wasn't reported in the paper.
That's right.
And she looked at me and she's like, huh, well, how am I supposed to know that if nobody's talking about it? I said, that's the problem, is there's not a method for your ability to get this information. This all happened on Facebook.com in a private Facebook group.
Yep.
You know, like, so how do we tell people who aren't sitting online doing this what's going on and get them to show up? Because she wanted to be there. She wanted to say something, but she had no idea it was happening. And I don't have an answer to that. You know,
it's a fight fire with fire thing, right? Like, you have to be as well organized as the other side because they are on Facebook. They're keeping track, like, no one's business of what the books are and who the people are, and they're on alert and they're high alert and they're zealots and it's their hobby. And that kind of passion is hard to combat if you are, I don't know, a reasonable person trying to live your life, but also think you shouldn't ban books. It's hard to have that kind of passion. It just is. I mean, I'm speaking for myself here.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You shouldn't have to do this, right? I mean, you say this all the time.
Right.
We didn't do this. It's not our fault. It's not the kids' fault. But practically speaking, to have a win like that takes doing things you don't want to do. It just mm-hmm. does. It just does. You shouldn't have to do, but it just does.
There's a passage I keep coming back to again and again in Matthew Desmond's just released book, Poverty by America. And he talks about how...
Sorry, go ahead. Sorry.
It's so good.
Get to that book.
He talks about, you know, we're the richest country in the world, and yet we are the most impoverished. We have the most people in poverty, and we don't do anything to help alleviate the situation. And he talks about how this is an issue of both the left and the right. The right doesn't want to grant the sort of social nets to help make this happen. The left, mm-hmm. on the other hand, just likes complaining about it on Twitter, but doesn't actually follow through on any actions. And he talks about how during the pandemic, there was the moratorium on evictions, and it was the most effective act that has gone through to help alleviate poverty. Bipartisan support on this one. However, nobody wrote to say that they liked this. Nobody told the politicians this was a great act. So when it was time for it to come to an end, it came to an end because nobody was speaking up about it. And that was chilling, you know, to read that and realize the reason that these things end, the reason that we can't have good things is because, you know, people who think they are doing the right thing or people who believe in the right thing aren't using their voices to say, this is the right thing, keep it up. And so I'm tying this back into these right to read bills. You know, I don't think they're perfect. I don't think they're great. However, I think that those should be wake-up calls for people both in these states and across the country, even in states that have passed these draconian LGBTQ, these draconian book ban bills. You need to be writing to your politicians. You need to be writing to them and saying, look, this is great. Please keep doing the good thing. Or I can't believe you passed this. Don't ever expect my vote again. You don't speak on behalf of me. You know, like, you have to spend the time. It sucks. It's not fun.
It sucks, but give
you know, but put it on your calendar, 20 minutes a day, you know, a week, whatever. Just use form letters. Like, you don't even have to reinvent the wheel here, but like, you got to show up, you got to do the work, and it's not going to get better, you know, until more people know what's going on and can do the same thing.
Well, and I think one thing that these overarching state-level laws are a part of is just making it so it's not frictionless for a couple of people, a couple of bigots to show up and get all the books tossed out. And I think it's going to be like, just make it a little bit harder in like 9 different ways, and maybe some of it will go away of its own accord. There's not one solution, right? There isn't. The locals, every locality is so different and so specific, and there's so many books and individual actors that there isn't any kind of like, if we just did X, then all this would stop. But it's going to be a little bit of this, and we're going to make it a little bit harder here, and a few more people will show up, and there's a little bit more protection here. And that can have a multiplicative effect because, as you say, or as your story, I think, elucidates, is part of the reason is that this is happening is because it's pretty easy for right-wing activists to do. It's too easy for them to do. We've made it too easy for them to do. And we just need to make it, we need to keep making it a little bit harder. A little bit harder here and a little bit harder there. And I think it's a winning issue in a lot of places, even at the national level. I think it's a winning issue that if packaged correctly, most common, I hate to do this thing of like catering to independent voters, but I also like to win elections, Kelly. But like, I think most people kind of get it. Like, this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
We shouldn't be doing this.
And as I like to say, traditional conservatives don't like this. They're about small government. Small government is not about going into the library and pulling out the books. Like, that is not what this is about. So, you know, I think it's a very specific branch of right wing activists, quote unquote, who are, you know, doing a lot of this. And if I could end with like one more positive, I think is coming out of this, and I hate that this is a positive, but just in my own experience, I'm seeing that more and more libraries. And I can't speak to schools because I'm not as aware of how that works mm-hmm. there. But more and more libraries are starting to pay attention to the mental health of their employees. Yeah. And I think that this has been a huge wake-up call to the reality of working with the public and the reality of working in a situation where your job is so politicized, even though that's not why you got into the job. And so at the end of the day, you know, I think that there are more discussions happening about that. And I think that there is going to be a wave of change just in how people are treated in the workplace with each other. And that is not a bad thing. You know, I think especially as people realize that their colleagues are the queer brown people whose books are being pulled from shelves. And those are people, you know, books are important, but it's not about the books. It's about the person sitting next to you who is literally being teared apart every single day in the media and then treated like garbage when they're at work. And how can you, with any privilege you have, make their life just a little bit better?
Just a little bit. Yeah. Just take the edge off or some one part of the edge.
Yeah.
Off.
Kelly,
thank you so much for joining us today. We're kicking the rest of the stories to the curb. Rebecca will have to clean up for us. Oh, wait, I'm going to be on that too. But while we had you here, I'm glad we spent some time doing this. I'm going to link to the stories we talked about here, but Kelly also has some durable resources that I've linked to before in the show notes, but you can find them here. It doesn't hurt to put them back again. And, you know, I don't know, you know, if you're listening to this show, you care about books probably three orders of magnitude more than most people in your community. I'm just gonna make that as a guess.
I would say more like 10, honestly.
So
probably more like 10.
And this is not to put too fine a point on it, but like, if you're not doing something and you think something should be done, who do you think is going to do it?
Mm-hmm.
Someone else that listens to a book podcast? And I'm not accused. It's hard, man, and I've got my own work to do. I think Kelly's the only one here that doesn't have more work to do, right? She's doing her part. But you know, like there aren't any more adults around here, man. It's just us.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the truth of the matter. And you might think about, you know, maybe ask your school librarian, is there a way to keep in touch if something comes up? Ask your local library. You can be, you know, look at Kelly's toolkit, write your people, you know, because there's no adults in the room other than us. And I think that's hard to understand. That was something that was hard to me understand growing up. It's hard for me to understand now, but it's the truth. Anyway, Kelly, we'll talk to you again when Brittany's book come out, and I'm sure we'll have all kinds of other kinds of things to say. Do you have a favorite of these? Well, let's get on something a little bit lighter. A favorite celebrity memoir. Was the Paris one? You like the Jessica Simpson. Well, these are all recency bias because I heard you talking about them. But is there something in the Pantheon that I don't know about that you're like, oh yeah, this is the high I'm looking to chase when I open one of these up?
No, I just, you know, I will say the thing that I really like and the thing that I look for is that the audiobook is performed by the
there you go.
Who wrote it.
1,000%.
So I loved listening to Paris tell her story. I loved listening to Jessica tell her story. Brittany better be telling her story. And I was going to say Brittany phrase, but I know it would get us censored. Just imagine what it is.
Okay. I think I've got... Yeah, I think if we get any rumblings that someone else is narrating that book, we're going to have to start a letter writing campaign. Luckily, you can repurpose your letter writing and activist playbook to something a little less... a little lower stakes. You can find show notes to this and all back episodes of the Book Riot Podcast at bookriot.com/listen. You can email us, me. I'm the one that checks the email, podcast@bookriot.com. Go check out First Edition. Go check out Literary Activism. Kelly captains that newsletter for us. That's a very good way to see the kinds of things that are happening out there. There's so much happening that we can't cover. It's just impossible to cover local things, but you can see the kinds of things. Maybe someone you know is one of these jurisdictions that might care about knowing this. A really good resource there as well. Go check out the Patreon to see the summer draft and also First Edition to see the May It book. I'll tease this. My pick, both Rebecca and I agreed that our pick for the best guess of the It Book of May comes out next week. It's a May 16th release. That's what we call a tease in the business. So you can go, you have to go listen to that over on First Edition for free. I've also got an episode I'm very excited about coming out next week that it's not something I've ever done before. I talked to an author that has sold more books than any author I've ever talked to before in my life doing this. So thank you so much, Kelly. Well, we're not going to wait 8 years to have you back. We've got to have you come back some other time. Oh, and I should say, gosh darn it, I forgot this. Kelly and Vanessa joined me on First Edition to talk about Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret.
Yes. A
wonderful time. You've seen the movie. 30 seconds on the movie, Kelly. Then I swear I'll let you go.
Okay. It's great. And it is very much about transitions in life. We're talking not just what happens with Margaret, but what happens with her mother, what happens with their grandmother. And it's one of those films that is definitely an intergenerational film. So young people will love it. Older people will love it. You don't have to have read the book to love it, but it is very faithful to the source text.
Wonderful.